This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. With another 60 minutes of radio drama from the golden age of radio, this is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We're going to hear first this week from the Hollywood Star Playhouse, an episode from October 9th. 1950, titled Of Night and the River. And it's a quick Incredible But True with Welcome Home. We'll finish off with The Adventures of Frank Race and The Diver's Loot, an episode from October 16th, 1949.
Now, Mr. Joseph Cotton on the Bromo Seltzer Hollywood Star Playhouse. Bromo Seltzer presents Hollywood Star Playhouse. Tales of suspense, thrills, adventure by Hollywood's finest writers with Hollywood's top stars. Portions of this program are transcribed and is brought to you by Bromo Seltzer, the fast, effective headache help which reminds you to
fight headache three ways.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Herbert Rawlinson. Welcome to the Bromo Seltzer Hollywood Star Playhouse. Listen carefully to tonight's play, for there is a dark river in our story, and a dark current flowing forever to a shrouded sea. A dark current and an undercurrent. This is a story of greed and hate and of savage men, of a terrible chase in which the end is a river, a nightmare of flight and pursuit. This is an essay on terror. This is Joseph Cotton as Harry Croft, the fugitive in Of Night and the River.
Chairs is as far as they'll go. Banner and Scarf and Chimp, they just won't do it, not to me. Grissom, yes. Loot, Lowry, sure. They'd do it to them. They did it to them. But I'm different. And I don't know where the diamonds are. They'll believe me. They've got to believe me. I've got to stay awake. I've got to make sense what I've done for that. That stuff they gave me. To make me talk just made me sleepy. And I've got to keep my wits about me. I don't want to happen to me what happened to Grissom and Loot. Loot! Oh, I covered him right up to the top of the barrel with that cement. Oh, that's an awful way to... They're coming back now. Here they come. Steady, Croft. Steady.
Close the door, Chimp.
All right. Don't just stand there looking at me. Say something. Ask me questions. I got the answers. I got nothing to hide.
Same old fool questions, Croft. What happened to the Imbrie necklace?
I never had it.
Same fool question, same fool answer.
The truth.
Persuade him, Barry. Yeah, go ahead. Persuade him.
Shut up, Chimp. Croft. How many people would you say there are in the world?
How many?
Roughly.
How many people? Well, I don't know.
Call each man.
I never counted them.
Never counted them, boy.
You're joking. You're kidding. What's the gag?
Croft, there are in round numbers about 2,400,000,000 people in the world.
Yeah.
In a crowd like that, you'd never be missed.
Look, Banner, I'm telling you, I never knew whether...
Once more, Croft, and only once more. The Imbrie diamond...
I told you I haven't got them, old lady. Imbrie still has them for all I know now. Get these ropes off me and let's get on to a little business.
Chimp.
Yeah, Chief?
I really think this should be a Dutch door job. Open on top, closed on the bottom.
I got me a brand new washtub right outside.
Washtub? Scott, you help Chimp with those bags of cement.
No, Fanny, I won't stand for it. I won't stand for it.
Hold it, boys. Croft says he won't stand for it.
Oh, Croft.
Yes, mon ami, yes, stand.
Oh, you're joking.
It's a dirty night, Croft. There's a cold yellow fog on the river. Even your soul, Croft, would get soaked to the middle in that dirty yellow fog.
Oh, cut it. Stop.
Not that your soul wouldn't come out a lot cleaner even in that film.
Crazy.
It has a smell, the fog. It smells yellow and wormy. It smells yellow. It sounds dirty yellow. I want you to hear it.
Oh, close it. Close the window. Close.
Listen to the dead river, Croft. Listen to the boats. The weird boats on the weird yellow river. The barges on the River Lethe. The river of hell.
Go.
Now listen.
It's enough, Fanny. Close it.
You won't stand for it, Croft.
Please. Fanny, please. I'm pleading with you. I'm begging. Is that any good? Is that what you want? Begging?
You'll stand for it. Nothing to do but stand. You stand in the tub, and the brethren here pour in the cement. And when it's solid enough, we take you down to the river. You go down, standing up, straight down. The water cold, the water crushing, your head bursting, the water black, crushing the air out of you. Oh, you'll stand for it, Croft. You'll stand a long time, swaying with the tide. Way down.
No.
Foul night and the foul river. Night and the river.
No, please.
Darkness, and then the flood. And then nothing.
Fanny, don't do it.
Chimp.
I'm crawling, Fanny. I'm crawling
Chimp.
To you.
Scott.
No, Fanny, no.
You better get the stuff.
This can't be happening. Not to me. It's a dream, an awful dream, a nightmare. It can't be happening. The river out there, Chimp on one side of me in the car, Scott with that... dead smile on his face on the other side, Fanner up front driving. It's not happening. The river, the ride, the tub of hot cement hugging my legs. It can't be. Think. I've got to think. Get out of this if it kills me. Die, yes, but not that way. Dirty black river. Think. It's wet out. Chimp and Scarf know I can't do much with cement halfway up to my knees. They're just sitting there, arms folded, no guns out. Anyhow, Scarf never carries a gun. He strangles with that white scarf of his. No guns then. So, if I stood up and reached over fast and wrapped my arms around Fanner's throat and pulled, he'd let go of the whistle. Yes, I'll wait. Wait till we take the curve in the dark street, then I'll do it. Throw us into a skid. Yes.
Rob, you wonder why I, a cultivated person, master's degree and all that, you wonder why I'm doing this to you?
He's paralyzed. He ain't wondering anything.
Hasn't that shot we slipped you worn off, Croft?
Dirt. Filth, that's what you are. Filth and corruption.
That's singularly correct, Croft. But consider...
You're crazy.
You're only one of the thousands who die momentarily. Bitterly in squalor and defeat. You're only one more victim of the beast, Croft. And the beast, my dear Croft, is man. Man, the ape in armor, inflicting mindless pain and stupid death. You're a casualty of life, Croft, of the world neurosis. And we are all casualties.
You're talking crazy because you are crazy. Fanner, if you'd only wait until this goes away, you wouldn't be doing this to me.
You're quite right, Croft. I am crazy.
He learned it in college, chum.
We'll be there soon.
Hey, you want to watch out in the next turn. It's a bad one. Wet.
Thank you.
It goes more thick than fog.
Yeah, Frenchie. It grows more thick than fog. Getting pretty cold.
Yeah.
Watch that curve now, Chief.
Yes. Watch that curve. Then stand up, arms around Fanner's neck, and pull. Pull him off the wheels, get the car. Casualty, huh? They'll see. Soon. Almost. Now.
Casualty, huh?
Casualty, huh?
Casualty,
huh?
I'll show you casualty.
Very still, very dark. Rain. I think I'm all right. Yes, not too bad. With 100 pounds of cement wrapped around your legs, you don't get thrown far. The others, I don't know. It's dark and still. Only, I know this, yes. I know this all right. The cement around my legs is broken off. I can move my legs. I can stand up. There's still a gob of cement hobbling my left leg, but I can walk. I can walk.
Stop.
Fanner's alive.
Stop. Are you all right?
No.
Yes. All right, dear. Are you all right? Bloody head. Nothing broken, though. Are you?
Right arm. I pulled it badly.
Escape. I must escape.
Gone. Dead. Chief, what about Croft?
We'll find him.
No. No, never. Run. Escape. Run, boys.
That will be our good friend Croft now, thinking he can escape forever.
It's no use. No use. I can't run with this. That's on my foot. I've got to rest. Just sit here. Rest.
Croft, old friend. Croft.
Old friend.
No use, you know. That lump of cement is crunching a crab man everywhere you go.
Well, what'll I do? What'll I do?
Oh, Croft!
Run. Escape. Ow. Closer. Closer.
Ah! It's no use, you know.
Run! Closer.
It's no use, old boy. Dear boy.
Oh, he's farther off.
What?
I've lost him. They don't think I could have got across the railroad tracks ahead of the train. They think I'm still on the wrong side of the tracks. Oh, I've lost them. I've lost them. I'm safe. I'm in the clear. I'm okay now. I'm in the clear. Oh, no. Come on. No, no. Go away. Go away. No, please, dog. Go away. Go away. I don't want to fight that. Down.
Croft.
Let me in.
What's happened? You're all bruised.
Oh,
bleeding.
Sit down. Chair.
Here. Sit here.
What's that on your foot?
It's cement.
Fanner?
Yes, Fanner. Chisel, have you got a chisel? A chisel, a hammer.
I've got a good hammer. No chisel.
Oh, have your screwdriver, then. Hurry up. Oh, he's crazy, that man. He's crazy.
The river?
Night in the river. Yes, the river.
I got it. Him, that education of his and hating the world and everybody in it.
Except you, huh?
Here's the hammer and the screwdriver.
Now, chip this cast off.
He after you now?
Yes. That chump's been scared one down.
Is it about the Embry necklace?
Yes.
Did you tell them where it was? Answer me, Harry. Harry, look at me. Look at me, I said.
Louise.
Drop those tools or I'll shoot. I want to know where the diamonds are, Harry.
You too. Everybody.
Better tell me where the diamonds are, Harry. Or so help me... So help me, I'll give you back to Fanna and the river.
Romo Seltzer, famous for fast headache help, is bringing you Hollywood Star Playhouse. Tonight starring Mr. Joseph Cotton in Of Night and the River.
Romo Seltzer, Romo Seltzer, Romo Seltzer, Romo Seltzer, Romo Seltzer.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? How do you do? This is your old friend Norman Brokenshire. You know, neighbors... An ordinary little headache can often spoil a big day for some people. No need to, though, when Bromo Seltzer fights a headache so fast, all three ways. Yes, sir, you get fast relief from that headache with Bromo Seltzer. At the same time, too, Bromo Seltzer will soothe the upset stomach and the jumpy nerves that may team up with that headache. What's more, you'll like the pleasant taste of Bromo Seltzer. It's so sparkling, so refreshing. Neighbors, do me a favor. Next time you get a headache, give Bromo Seltzer a trial. Try it on this guarantee. You must be satisfied or your money back. You'll see where others fail, Bromo Seltzer works. Bromo Seltzer is on sale at all drugstore fountains and counters. Don't for a minute be bothered with a headache. Get fast, pleasant, three-way help with
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
Now, Act Two of Night and the River, starring Mr. Joseph Cotton.
Who is it?
Anna. Louise, don't let
come in.
Congratulations, Louise.
He came up here for a hammer and chisel, and I put my gun on him.
Good work, Louise.
Good work, Louise. She was trying to double-cross you. She wanted the stones for herself, and she'd have crossed you for them. Good work, Louise.
Shut up, Croft.
You don't believe it, do you? You don't believe, Louise, your lily girl would cross you. Well, I'll tell you what...
Shut up!
Oh. That's my chance. That slap is my chance. The gun is limp in his hurt hand, and I go in under the good arm and grab for the bad one in the gun, and I can't reach it. For a terrible second, I can't reach it. It's like a dream again, a bad dream, a horrible nightmare. And I've got it. Last, I've got the gun, and if it is a nightmare, it's theirs now. The scare's on them.
Stand where you are, Scott. Drop that gun at my feet, lily girl. Now. All of you go to different corners of the room.
You're going to shoot us all in the back, Croft? Is that the idea?
No, Fanny. This is very good. I'm going to pick up this gun of Louise's. Then I drop it in the dead center of the table here. Now, go to different corners of the room, the three of you. Walk! You're all the same distance from the gun. That gives me time to get out of here. First one of you to to the gun eliminates all other claims to the diamonds.
You scum.
Why don't you just shoot us all, Crow?
I've got every rap in the world on me, except murder.
There's no escape, Crow. We are all foredoomed. An escape is an illusion. You are marked by your fate. You can't escape. We're all marked. And the brand of Cain and the mark of the beast is on us all, and we shall die. And the dark river will cover us all. We shall die. Escape, Croft, is a dream. It's too late.
You are crazy.
Then escape, Croft. Try.
I'm going to back out of the room. No one move. No one move until I'm gone. Then race for the gun, hmm? Survivor becomes my partner in diamonds, okay? Go! Run down the stairs. I float, I fly with strange lightness and elation. My foot is free. I'm free. At the bottom of the stairs, I stop for a second. Carefully, I slip into the wet, musty night smelling of the nearby wharves. I haven't the diamonds, but I know where to get them. There's a party at the Ember Mansion tonight, and I'll get the diamonds all right, and then get rid of the survivor upstairs, whoever it is. Oh, it's a dream, all right. Now.
Stop where you are.
Who's that? Who's there?
The survivor.
Scarf.
Put your hands up in the air.
We're partners now, Scarf.
Your hands up, Cole.
All right.
We'll cover you for your gun now. Thank you. Now, where is the neck?
I haven't got it.
Try again.
I said I haven't got it.
You'll be very wise not to lie.
I came here to get it myself.
You lie. The woman does not have the necklace. I was just in there. I got here before you for that necklace. The contemptible woman did not have the stones. Even as I was strangling her with my scarf, she denied the stones.
You killed her?
With my scarf. In the Apache way. Strangling.
You think I have the stones? I haven't.
You admit that you came here to get them. Even dying, the woman swore she didn't have them, that they were stolen. Stolen? Called you stole them.
I just came here.
The diamonds, if you please.
I don't have them, I tell you.
You're a liar.
We can't go through all this again. I'm not lying. What good would the stones be to me if I'm sunk in the river or dead in the cypresses here? Don't be a fool's call.
Croft, you see this gun here in my hand?
You shoot your neck off the ground. There are police all over.
But who talks of shooting? There. I throw the gun into the darkness. This, my white scarf, is silent and
pale. No.
You are white in the darkness, eh?
Keep away.
Do you want to die? Do you want your eyes to stick out of your head? Do you want your tongue to go purple in your
scarf,
mouth?
Scarf, gotta listen to me.
An end to this scarf.
Now, wait.
No more time.
No.
Don't you push me.
No.
No.
Joking. I suddenly realized the truth. I tried to tell Scarf. No use. Too late. Joking. Oh, the truth is, Fanna must have had the diamonds all the time. Fanna, the double crossing, all of us. Then I realized something else. This is a dream. After all, everything proves it. Oh. The terrible events of the night, my weakness and reaching for Fanner's gun, the way I floated down the steps from that room, my trying to scream and only a croak coming out now. This choking, all nightmare, already dying. I feel myself waking, dying, waking up. Waking up. I wake up. I open my eyes over the overwhelming relief that this awful dream is over. Relief.
Away? Away.
Scarf.
The matter, Dope? Did you get to sleep nice?
Jim. Jim was killed in the crash.
We're almost there.
Banner driving the car. The river.
Almost there now.
I look down slowly at my feet. I have no feet. They're deep, deep in cement. 100 pounds. 100 pounds of sinker clutching at my legs. Oh, nightmare. It was a nightmare, all right. It was a dream, but it began too late. It began after they had me. The river. Nightmare.
Night and the river. The fate man makes for himself.
Nightmare without awakening.
Get him out, boys.
No, no, no.
Banner, the cops.
Yeah, the police.
Hurry up, get rid of Crowe.
Now, Banner, please.
Shoot! Help! Banner, shoot! Let him have it! Let him have it!
Shoot his head!
Shoot! Keep it up! Help! Let him have it!
I'll drag you in myself, Crowe.
No. Banner, give up! Banner, you hit! Give up!
Night and
no.
River!
No, Banner, don't! Don't! No! No!
Joe, that was really a suspenseful performance. Thank you very much.
Well, Herb, this is the kind of show I really like to do. But please don't forget Hans Conried, who played the part of Fanny. Thanks, Hans.
In just a moment, I'm going to introduce Mr. Robert Ryan, the star of next week's play. Now, here is Norman Brokenshire.
Say, did you ever notice how many things happen in threes? Right now, I'm thinking of a headache and the upset stomach and jumpy nerves that often team up with it. But you don't have to worry about that when you have Bromo-Seltzer handy. No, sir, for Bromo-Seltzer is especially compounded to fight a headache all three ways, and to fight it fast, too. So next time a headache strikes, try Bromo-Seltzer. See how fast it works in helping the headache's pain. Also, how it soothes the upset stomach and the jangled nerves that may come with it. You'll like the sparkling, refreshing taste of Bromo-Seltzer, too. It's on sale at all drugstore counters and fountains. Caution, use only as directed. And, of course, if a headache persists or recurs, see your doctor. Keep a bottle of Bromo-Seltzer at home and another bottle where you work. Yes, remember, don't just fight a headache one or two ways.
Joseph Cotton can currently be seen in the RKO motion picture Walk Softly, Stranger, co-starring Valley. Tonight's play was written especially for Mr. Cotton by Milton Geiger, with music composed and conducted by Jeff Alexander. The entire production is under the Mr. Robert Ryan.
Every detail of the horrible accident was etched in my mind, and I knew I was the only witness to it. But when I fled, it was straight into the path of a man who ruled every rotten racket in the city. A man who wanted my silence or my death.
Well, Bob, that sounds like the makings of a real thriller for next week. On tonight's program, all characters and incidents were fictitious. Any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Portions of this program were transcribed. And now this is Herbert Rawlinson saying goodnight for all of us here on the Hollywood Star Playhouse and for Bromo-Seltzer, the fast, effective headache help in the familiar blue bottle. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There are on record numerous incidents in which dogs have shown an almost human sensitivity. More startling than these, however, is the strange and tragic story of a dog, Hamlet, whose awareness, whose perception, proved to be nothing less than superhuman.
In the daily routine of the Rockwell household, where Hamlet the dog made his home, there was only one event which succeeded in arousing him from his customary brooding lethargy. That was young Ruth Rockwell's return home from the City College each afternoon. And so, on that fatal evening in November of 1929, when Ruth came into the house with a strange, preoccupied expression and an unnatural glint in her eyes, Hamlet jumped up from his favorite spot before the fireplace and came bounding toward her. But the girl ignored him this time and walked straight upstairs to her room. When she had removed her coat, she sat down at her desk and began to write.
"And I know it will be a terrible blow to you, and you will grieve for me. But even though I am dead, don't think that you will never hear from me again. Every night, at exactly 9 o'clock, I will try to come back to you."
A few miles away at the Curtis Airfield, a young flight instructor was warming up his plane, preparing to take off. He was to give Ruth Rockwell her first lesson in night flying. And at length, she appeared and took her place behind the dual controls. When the plane had risen several hundred feet into the air and was circling over the field, Ruth Rockwell suddenly climbed up on the cockpit cowling, and while the instructor gasped in horror, she stepped calmly out into the empty blackness and went plunging to her death. It was early the following morning when her grief-stricken father found the note lying on the pillow. With tears streaming down his cheeks, he read it aloud to her mother. And then he folded it and put it away. That evening, even though they knew that she was gone forever, as the hour of 9 approached, both of them found themselves growing tense and expectant. Mr. Rockwell and his wife would have spoken if they could, but that was impossible. For both knew that now they were awaiting something. As the clock began to strike, they leaned intently forward, their every sense alert. Nine strokes, and it was then, at that very moment, that the dog Hamlet jumped suddenly to his feet, bounded toward the door, barking wildly, his tail wagging, exactly as if he were greeting someone who had just entered.
"He's never done that before, except when Ruth walked into this room."
From that night on, throughout the weeks and months that followed, the same remarkable thing occurred. They had no choice but to conclude that somehow Ruth had kept her promise. That though they themselves were unaware of her presence, still she had returned in some mysterious form. A form incredible but true.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Paul DuBose. The war changed many things, the face of the earth and the people on it. Before the war, Frank Race worked as an attorney, but he traded his law book for the cloak and dagger of the OSS. And when it was over, his former life was over too. Adventure had become his business. The Adventures of Frank Race. And now we join Frank Race for The Adventure of the Diver's Loop.
London, under a heavy rush of cumulonimbus clouds, shelling thunderheads that looked as though they might knock off your head at any moment. I just left the embankment and was hurrying across Westminster Bridge when...
"Hey, Race! Race, wait a sec!"
It was Mark Donovan, running to catch me. For some reason, the sight of a New York taxi driver of foot in London seemed incongruous enough to raise a grin.
I give up. What's so funny? Because the guy's to lope like a hypo bank yeller come up with...
"Sorry, joke. Mark. I was just thinking how different this is compared to ramming a cab along 42nd Street.
It's so different. Just had to hack my way to a Jan. It was worse than going for the X's on fight night. I can't
tell this. Slow down. You're wheezing like a sump pump.
You ought to be. I almost forgot. I've been pulled this marathon because the guy wants to see it. Personality named Rose.
Lawrence Rose?
Yeah, yeah. Very pip-pip and cheerio. Wants to see you pronto. Offices in Eaton Square, you know.
I can't take on another assignment. We should be getting back to New York. But I'll see Rhodes anyway. Everything about Lawrence Rhodes was thin. His weight, his hair, the wispy line of his very blonde mustache. He looked as though he might be the operator of an exclusive ladies' shop. Actually, he served as British representative for Acme Indemnity. And during the war, he had cracked a Normandy beachhead as leader of a tough commando unit.
Decent of you to come, Ray. We feel it's imperative that we have an American in on this, since it's an American venture to begin with.
Well...
And you then it's the case of children losing their lives. Oh, forgive me. What were you saying?
I was going to say that... What's this about kids losing their lives?
A little French lad, killed aboard the salvage vessel.
Rhodes, I'm afraid you're going to have to start this from the beginning.
Of course. Old habit of mine, assuming people have previous knowledge of what I'm talking about. Forgive me. All this stems from a salvage operation, just across the channel. But before we discuss it further, I wanted to meet someone.
He left me for a few minutes and came back with a husky-looking man of about 50. The man he introduced is Charles Menifee.
Mr. Menifee can tell you much more about this matter than I can, Ray. He's in charge of the operation.
It's a cleanup job. My company secured the contract for dragging the harbor off Cherbourg. We've been picking up the residue of stuff that was sunk there during the war, particularly after D-Day. I happened to be on the vessel in question when this affair took place. Besides the mishap to the boy, we lost a diver by the name of Joe Donner. Just disappeared, leaving nothing but broken signal and airline.
How old was the boy, and how did he happen to be aboard?
He was 12, a waterfront kid that had been made a sort of a mascot by the men. Apparently, they smuggled him on the vessel for this voyage. It was all pretty much of a mix-up, and no one seemed to know anything about it.
That brings up an important point, Ray. Acme is indemnifying Menifee's company against all liability, and if this youngster died on that vessel, then we'll assume our full obligation. But we should know, if he really did die on the boat, your opinion on the report will decide that for us.
What sort of accident was it?
That's the peculiar part of it. The thing probably can't be called an accident at all. You see, the boy was shot to death.
Menifee and I left Rhodes' office together and stood talking on the street while waiting for cabs. I was to fly across the channel that evening. He would meet me in Cherbourg on the following day. And as we planned this, a car sidled up to the curb. A gleaming new sedan with the rakishness of a destroyer stopped directly alongside us, and a quiet voice spoke from the rear seat.
Don't you guys try rushing off anywhere. You'll develop more holes than a bum alibi.
From the look of him, he might have been an usher at your sister's wedding. He even had the carnation on his lapel. With the manner of a maestro handling a rare fiddle, he lifted the submachine gun he'd been holding in his lap.
Get your hooks behind your head and get in here with me.
Should be an enjoyable ride. It's a beautiful car.
A most beautiful car.
Ain't bad for a foreign job. Okay, Connie, but take it easy. We don't want to have to brush off any nosy cops.
Now you're being discreet. In this country, they object to people who carry artillery.
We carry what we like, anywhere we go.
Nothing like self-confidence. We haven't met before, have we?
I never forget a face. We ain't met.
I'm Frank Race. My friend's name is...
I know your friend's name. Menifee. I
hadn't realized I was so renowned.
How about your identity?
Me? I'm Freddie Troy, an independent boater. I run a little business of my own.
How is business?
Don't pay like it used to, especially over here. Guy's got to take what he can get.
Yeah. Well, from the looks of this car...
Menifee, I'll give fair odds that the owner of this car hasn't the slightest idea as to who's driving it at this moment.
You're a real hep personality, Ray.
Do you mind telling us what this is all about?
No, I don't mind. I'm taking you out to the country for a ride. A real old-fashioned ride.
But what for?
Some people in Sherbert, they think you're in the way. So I'm taking care of you. And when I take care of somebody, I do it right.
He let his own words send him a little. Just enough to relax the vigilance that had been in his attitude.
In instant, the nose of the submachine gun wandered upward away from Menifee and myself, so I lunged! I didn't have to yell at Menifee. He was already on top of the driver as the four of us string.
Now look what you've done. I'm mad at you.
All right, Troy, now use a little payment in kind.
Right. The machine gun. I'll get him.
Knock him cold. Are you all right, Race?
I think so.
Yeah, you deflected that gun upward just in time. He'd have killed a dozen people.
Where's Troy?
Troy? Well, he must have got lost in the crowd.
Well, conditions are getting better in London. Last time I was here, I had to dodge bombs. This time, it was just machine gun bullets.
Cherbourg is still a disabled war veteran, showing gaunt open spaces and bombed-out buildings as new testimony of the travail she endured. I met Menifee again at the Creole, one of the larger hotels. With him was a man and woman he introduced as Jim and Sandra Whalen. Jim Whalen worked as Menifee's head driver. He must have seen too many George Raft pictures, judging from the way he persisted in twirling a keychain all the time we talked. The woman, slim, young, red-headed, rated seconds on any man's glance.
Turned up anything yet, Race?
Nothing. But I had Mark Donovan out looking for leads. You haven't met him. He's tops when it comes to prying out clues.
I want you to know I'm suspending all operations for the time being. The local police seem pretty well stopped by it.
The four of us sat in the lobby and watched it begin to rain outside. The conditions had turned the city gray and dismal looking. Succumbing to the effect of the weather, Menifee and Jim Whalen presently left to take on a few drinks. Sandra Whalen immediately crinkled her nose at me.
About time we had a chance to talk to each other. I get pretty tired of hearing nothing but diving and salvage.
Oh? What would you prefer to discuss?
You and me.
Somehow I get the feeling that that could become rather complicated.
Oh, I'm counting on it. Do you mind?
What's the matter, bored?
I was, until you came along. But I'm not bored now. I'm not bored at all.
Sorry, Ducky. There are certain conditions under which I never move in, and this seems to involve all of them.
Oh? Well, you better tell me about it. You see, I've always been led to believe I was rather attractive.
You're most attractive. But there happens to be a guy in the background. A guy by the name of Jim Whalen.
Who also happens to be my brother.
Your brother?
If you doubt it, go and ask him.
I'd look pretty silly doing that. No, I'm more than willing to take your word for it. And now, would you begin all over again?
Begin what?
Those ideas you were advancing. Those very provocative ideas concerning us.
I've given you too much of a lead, as it is.
Let's not waste time with regret. Isn't there another spot, perhaps, a little music?
I know just the spot. Come on, we can slip away before they get back.
Cherbourg no longer seemed gray and dreary. For me, it had suddenly assumed the atmosphere of a Mardi Gras, a mummer's parade. But at the door to the hotel, there came an interruption.
Going somewhere, Rick?
That's rather obvious, isn't it? Sandra, this is Mark Donovan.
Hello, Mom.
I don't blame you for going somewhere, but I'm afraid I gotta park you too much.
Get lost, Mark. I'm sure that whatever you have in mind can wait.
Look, Race, you will probably want to flog me from here to Paris, but it won't wait. It's a red-hot break. It's gotta be handled now.
Go with him, Race. We can make it later. Shall we say tomorrow evening?
You're a very understanding person.
I'm a very consistent person. See you later, Race.
Marcus? This lead of yours had better be good.
It's good, chum. Let's go.
Where?
Spot called the Bar de Bouc. It ain't the Crillon, of course.
Crillon.
Yeah. Like I said, it ain't the Crillon, but it has its point. It definitely has its point. ain't there something, right? Nice to forget all about the rain outside, huh?
Who are we going to talk to?
And a table in the corner. A guy and a dame. He's the American I was telling you about. The one that gave me the knockdown tour. Look, I know you just left the pit, but, ain't this girl something?
She was wearing a black suit and a beret. She had dark eyes and honey-colored hair. She was smoking a cigarette in a long holder, and she looked like something Renoir would have put on canvas. We went over, and Mark made us know to one another, identifying the girl as Annette, the man as Phil Benson. We had drinks and began a casual conversation. Benson turned out to be a paving contractor, dickering with the city of Cherbourg for some of its road rebuilding work.
Well, it's kind of tough. They don't want to give it to anyone but a Frenchman. I don't blame them in a way, but I could certainly save them a lot of money on know-how.
Ernest, Mark Donovan tells me you know something about what occurred on that salvage boat last week.
Yes, I know something.
Wouldn't want to tell me about it, would you?
No. I will only speak of what I know to the men who are in charge of the boat.
Is it a question of money?
Frankly, yes.
I can get it for you.
No. No, I will only speak to that man himself. The man called Menachie.
All right. We'll make it tonight. Meet Jay at the Creon at 8 o'clock. Is that all right?
Yes, sir. That is all right.
Meet Jay at the Creon happened to be the apartment Mark and I were occupying. And I had Menachie there at 7:30. He came in with a serious face and a morose attitude. Took a couple of drinks to bring him to the point of unburdening his mind.
Sandra, Ray, say, I don't suppose you have any idea that she and I are engaged.
Engaged? No, I didn't have any such idea. Sandra didn't say anything about it this afternoon.
Yes, Sandra's like that. Restless. Always on the lookout for excitement, but I have hopes that she'll settle down.
Of course, I'm sure she will. That must be our caller.
Hello, Ray.
Come in, Annette. This is Mr. Menifee.
Hello, Annette. Ray says you have some information for me.
Yes, Mr. Menifee. I have three things to tell you. First, that I consider you a murderer. Second, that I am the mother of a dead child. And third, that I now intend to kill you with a pistol.
Annette!
We'll return to the adventures of Frank Race in just about 1 minute. And now, back to the adventures of Frank Race.
Menifee was down, but I couldn't tell how badly he'd been hurt. I was too involved with a twisting, writhing woman whose intent was to send more bullets into his body.
Let me go! Let me go!
You little idiot, you're not solving anything by making a play like this. Give me that gun!
No!
Give me that gun!
No!
I'm sorry. You left me no alternative. Now, if you're smart, you'll get out of here. Your police don't like people who use guns.
What? I'm not going to hold you?
No, get going.
Is it anything? Nothing.
Ray.
Better stay put, Menifee. Till I get some help here.
Didn't seem too bad. You saved my life by grabbing her the way you did.
She had me fooled right down to the ground. Where were you hit?
It seems to be near the shoulder.
Here. I'll pack it, then I'll get you a doctor.
Oh, no, doctor. I'll take care of this myself.
You've got to have a doctor, Menifee. It would be terrible.
No, I'll take care of it myself. Bring in a doctor and you bring in the police. I've had enough publicity on this thing.
We're likely to need the police. That girl might try this again.
You can take care of that for me. I'll find her, persuade her that I'm not at fault. I'm doing all I can to clean up the situation. But no doctors. No police.
There was no doubt but that Annette would be in hiding. The next morning, Mark and I looked up Phil Benson, the roving paving contractor.
Yeah, I know where she is. Why should I tell you guys? Well, you can make trouble for her.
Look, don't be a dub, will you? We ain't going to give her no grief. I just want to help her.
That's right, Benson. I give you my word.
All right. I wouldn't want to give her a bum steer. She's a widow going through a bad time. And I'm nuts about it.
He took us to a small flat over a wine shop on a back street. Here, Annette received us casually, as though nothing unusual had happened. But the moment I mentioned Menifee, her eyes filled with storm.
You may as well know. If I get another chance at him, I shall try the same thing again.
But why? You're not sure that he caused the death of your son?
My son died on that man's boat. For me, that is enough.
Take it easy, will you, baby? Race is only trying to find out what really happened. He's only trying to help you.
I can promise that Menifee won't go to the police if you'll agree to let him alone.
Hear that, baby? Why don't you relax and learn to live again? Give a guy like me a chance to make things different.
Oh, let me alone. I don't want to talk about it.
You've got to talk about it, baby, for my sake. You know how I feel about you. Just give me time to make one of these saving deals and, well, things will be different, that's all.
Oh, please let me alone.
She stalked out of the room, and I realized the futility of trying to deal with a woman stricken as she had been. Benson looked stopped.
I can only get a break so I could take her away from here.
Are you having any luck?
Not to the city of Cherbourg. They just don't listen to me. And I could do their cement paving cheaper than anyone on the continent. It looks as though I've got about as much chance as a plugged boozer.
Yeah. Stick with it, son. Things will work out.
They have a way of doing that. We'll see you later, Benson.
Remember me?
Hello, Sandra.
Weren't you going to invite me in?
Of course.
Or are you reluctant to receive a lady at this late now?
Can I fix you a drink?
I've already had a drink. I've already had several drinks.
Well, you're a big girl now. They shouldn't hurt you.
I thought we had a date tonight.
Date?
You know we did.
Well, something came up, something I couldn't avoid.
Menefee talked to you, didn't he? Told you I was engaged to him.
Well, aren't you?
He told me he talked to you. You know, you had me fooled. I didn't think you'd let a thing like that slow you down.
A lot of things slow me down. That's just one of them.
Hate virtuous men, aren't you? Or I hate virtuous men.
That should simplify everything, then.
Yes, but it doesn't. Because after I decided I hated you, I couldn't stop thinking about you. But I stopped.
You make a very lovely drunk.
You are right. Then I dare you to do something. I dare you to put your arms around me and say that.
You think I'm not tempted?
Go on, then. Put your arms around me and say I make a very lovely drunk.
I'll make you another drink instead. Sit down, Ducky. You're a little unstrung. As a matter of fact, I'm getting a little unstrung myself.
You're a fool, Ray.
I know it. At this moment, I'm probably the biggest fool in Sherwood. In fact, I'm surprising the very devil out of myself. I'm keeping this light, Ducky, just enough glory juice to give a taste.
You think Menefee's worth being loyal to? Well, he isn't. He isn't worth it at all.
Here, refresh yourself, then you'd better go home.
Do you know why Menefee suspended salvage operations? Do you know why he's not letting anybody get aboard that boat?
I haven't the slightest idea, Ducky.
Because they have gold. A fortune in gold.
Gold? That sounds a little fantastic, Sandra.
They found the plane on the harbor bottom while they were grappling. A Royal Air Force plane that had been shot down during the war. They'd been carrying gold to occupy a plane to pay agents who wouldn't work for paper money.
Yes, they did that during the war.
That's why the child said. He happened to be aboard that day and someone shot him to keep him quiet. And that's why that diver turned up missing. Giordano.
Doesn't that up, Sandra? If it did, why didn't Menefee just take the gold and clear out?
Because he can't find it. That's the joke. It's somewhere on the boat, but he can't find it. Either the boy or that diver hid it before they were murdered. So he looked everywhere for that one. But he's been looking for the chest it was found in. Well, if I could get a boy...
Just how drunk are you, Sandra?
I'm pretty drunk, but I'm not teacher. I'm not teacher.
If you could get aboard, do you think you know where it is?
Maybe I do. Maybe I don't.
Let's go out to that vessel, Sandra. Let's go out. Just for the ducks of it. Can you see well enough to hold your course, Mark?
You kidding? I ain't seeing my way. I'm feeling it. Oh, what a night.
There she is. Cut the engine.
We're going to bump.
Oh, brother, what a break. We hit almost alongside the ladder.
Get the bow around, Mark.
All right.
All right, Sandra.
Watch your step, will you? Take the stairway to Buckingham Palace.
Gosh, we made it.
There's a light aft. Come on.
You know, we could be walking right into something here. Something rough and tough.
You can stop right now, pal. You've already walked into it.
It was Freddie Troy, the killer I'd met in London. With the light shafting past an open bulkhead, I could see that under one arm he cradled a bag of some sort, while at the same time he held a gun on us.
Well, well. That ain't the chum I met in England. You go around buttoned all kinds of things, don't you?
You don't seem as well equipped as you were last time, Troy. Then it was a Tommy gun, now it's just a .45.
That's enough for this job. Get back against the wall.
Gracie's gonna shoot us.
How'd you guess it, sister? That's far enough, punk.
You mean me?
Yeah, you. Now, folks, I'm sorry, but...
Mark, how'd you get that hand in your pocket? It wasn't reaching for cigars, Junior.
You had to do it. With him or us?
Oh, lady, you can put music in him, Lou.
Look, that bag. He dropped it and... filling gold coins.
We'll have a look at that later. First, let's see if we can do anything to Troy.
Okay, Race, but I'm afraid we're just wasting our time.
Mark was right. It was a case of too much sea and too much darkness. We'll return back to the lighted cabin. And here...
Watchman. He's dead.
Shot by Troy.
Yeah. Well, I guess I won't have to feel so bad.
Hey, look. Look where the coins have been hidden.
What do you know? In a fire hose.
But this is only part of it, a small part. Oh, we're too late. They've been carrying it away.
Yes, they've been carrying it away. But I've got a small hunch that I know where we might find it. They were both at the flat, and I got the feeling that he'd been talking to her again about going away. From the look of her, she hadn't been too responsive to his words.
Hello, Ray. What is it you want this time?
Money, Annette. A lot of money. Money that caused the death of your child.
You killed my boy? Yeah, but who would have it been now?
Benson would. Wouldn't you, Benson?
Me? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about a paving contractor calling himself Benson, who's really a deep-sea diver by the name of Joe Donner. How long have you known this man, Annette?
Only a few days. It's just...
Yes. He came to you so he could keep in touch with what was going on. It makes a grim thought, Benson, courting the kid's mother after what happened.
You're crazy.
You tripped yourself in a couple of ways. For one thing, no real paving man would say cement when he actually meant concrete. But you were authentic enough when you mentioned a bullseye today, because that's the term a lot of divers use for the eyepieces in their helmets. You and Freddie Troy were in this together, weren't you, Donner? You were the diver who brought up the chest of coins, which you knew would be confiscated by the government. So you took advantage of the excitement and hid the stuff. And you murdered that boy because he happened to see you. Then you made it look as though you'd been killed yourself, so you could hide out and pick up the coins later.
Hey, if you could prove it.
Ask him to open that bag he has at his feet, Annette.
I'm not opening anything. I'm just going out of here. Don't go for that gun, Annette. I know you got one, but don't go for it. I'll...
Hey, you stopped me. You let him get away.
He won't go far. Not in France.
And the bank's still here, baby. He didn't get the bag.
I could have killed him. You stopped me.
And right now, you hate me for it. But after a while, you'll be glad I did. After a long while, you'll be very glad.
The Adventures of Frank Race, starring Paul Dubov with Tony Barrett as Mark Donovan, comes to you from Hollywood. Others heard in tonight's cast were Lillian Baeff, Wilms Herbert, Paul McVeigh, Michael Ann Barrett, and Herbert Butterfield. This series is written and directed by Buckley Angel and Joel Murcott. The music is composed and played by Ivan Dittmar. Be sure to be with us again this time next week for another dramatic chapter in The Adventures of Frank Race. Art Gilmore speaking. This is a Bruce Ells production.
Going to do it for this show this week, but there's more old time radio every day at relicradio.com. Find all our shows listed on the website, along with links to everything else Relic Radio, and a link to our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the other Relic Radio shows. I appreciate it if you're able to help out. And a big thanks to those who have, and thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I'll be back next week with The Avenger and Murder at Midnight on a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.